I've officially started the recording, so now this is legit. Like, you can't, behave yourselves. How are you enjoying the drinks? Looking, raise a glass, my friend. Raise a glass. Very good. Yes, who are you? What? Oh, you were raising a theoretical glass.
Yeah.
Got it. Excellent. Welcome. My name is Sam Martineau, or Samuel Brown Martineau, if you will. And just a little context so you understand where I'm coming from. I am a debate teacher. I've taught speech and debate in the homeschooling community for, about 18 years now. I've taught thousands of kids. I teach about 300 kids this year. You probably have not heard of me because I teach in Utah. But someone in a conference in Utah saw me speaking. They invited me to come speak up here. So I guess what I'm saying is that... I don't know what I'm saying. Yeah, that's who I am. I teach debate, and if you want to know more about that, you could always ask me. Yes.
Good for you. Debate's amazing.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Awesome. Okay, so here's the deal. I actually wanted to start today with, like, a little bit... I need a victim, if you will. Some prey. You? Nailed it. Okay, yeah, I saw that hand go up. What's your name?
Kyla.
Excellent, Kyla. I would like to have a debate with somebody. Sound good? Great. Okay. You know what? Yeah, we can do it with you, but, like, we'll see if it devolves. Maybe it'll just end up being all of you. We'll see. Okay. Kyle, are you ready? Okay. So here's the deal. I want you to envision a scenario for me. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's imagine that there is a public school. Okay? This public school is called Vision High School. And Vision High School has a high school newspaper. If you could all imagine this, this would be great. So Vision High School has a newspaper, and this newspaper is called Clear Vision. And there's a girl who writes an op-ed or an opinion column monthly for the high school, and the opinion column is called Barb's Barbs. Her name is Barbara Walters, and she works for the Clear Vision newspaper. And that's an Easter egg, but you're all too young to get it. But the adults usually like that one. Yeah, I saw that smile in the back. Yeah, they usually get it. Anyway, the point is that Barbara, she comes to her editor of the paper, who is also the teacher of the class, and she says, here's my article that is for the newspaper this month. All right? So here's the article for the newspaper this month, and it's called Time to Change Mr. Beard. Mr. Beard is a teacher at the school. He's a chemistry teacher. He's a football coach. And in the article, she levies three accusations against Mr. Beard. She says, one, Mr. Beard is rude to his students. Kids come in, maybe not dressed the nicest, and he's like, oh, it looks like someone forgot to get dressed today. Did you even care to shower? Things like that. Two, she says, Mr. Beard also gives long, looping answers to questions. And these answers, they don't actually end up answering the question, and he won't take other questions. And number three, Mr. Beard, he gives preference to pretty girls and cheerleaders in particular. You might even say a creepy amount of preference. She says this based upon her individual circumstances, so she's drawing on her own experiences and interviews with four students. Sounding good? Everyone understands the situation so far. The teacher says, we're not publishing that. Why aren't we publishing it, says Barb? Because Mr. Beard is my friend, and I don't like what you're saying about him, and I don't think it's true. And even if it was true, the right place to talk about this is not in the school newspaper, it's with the administration. She says, that's not fair. I don't like that. I should be able to say what I want in my own opinion column. She says, I'm the editor of the newspaper and the teacher of this class, and I say no, I get to make the decision, and the answer is no. Barb argues back and forth, et cetera, et cetera. And then the teacher finally says, we're done arguing, the answer is no, and you can't do it. So, the next day, Barbara is supposed to be putting her last month's article in. The teacher said, well, you'll still get full credit because the article was written fine. So you'll still get full credit for the assignment. You got to put last month's in. So Barbara, when she goes, because it's her job to do the final formatting and printing, she goes and she says, you know what? I don't care what the teacher said. I'm putting my article in anyway. So she puts it in the newspaper, she prints it, and she puts it out on the newsstands, and everyone in the school is talking about it before anyone can do anything. You with me so far? The school is angry, and so is the teacher. So they give her an F on these, a zero on the assignment, which is an F. They kick her out of the school newspaper class and take her off the staff, and they give her a two-day suspension. Barbara's parents are rich, however, and they're not going to let some snotty school treat their little girl that way. So they sue, and they claim that the school has violated her free speech. I want to know who should win. The answer is the school violated her free speech, and they have to reinstate her in the class and give her the grade, etc., and apologize for the suspension. Or, so that's Barb wins, or the school wins, and Barbara has to suck it up. You know what? Let's have all of you answer. We'll get your answer, but let's take a vote. Do you have a question before we vote?
I
want to
say something about it.
Okay, give me 1 second. We're going to vote first, commentary second. You know what? I think maybe this is going to turn into a me versus all of you. Does that sound okay? We can still be involved, but I feel like there's some momentum in the room there. Okay. So, are there any questions before we vote? Raise your hand. Oh, what's your question?
Is there anything like in the school policy saying the teachers get to pick what's in the newspaper?
Yes, the school policy is the teachers in charge of the classroom, and they get to pick what's in the newspaper because they're the editor. You. Do you mean afterward?
Yeah, I need more information
about that. So the school did look into the allegations, and they handled it privately. Any questions? All right, raise your hand if you think the school should win. Strong majority. Raise your hand if you think that Barbara should win. A little bit of a minority. All right, I want to talk to those who said the school should win. I want to start with you. Why?
Teacher is, like, in charge of the class, and should be in charge of the students. The students shouldn't be making the decision.
The teacher's in charge of the class. She gets to make the choice. They're in charge of the student. Simple as that, wouldn't you say? Okay, great. Question. Who's next? Why should the school win? You.
Because when both Barbara and her parents signed the paper that would have had to put her into the newspaper club, it would clearly state that the teacher is over whatever is stated, whatever she puts in, regardless of whether it's true or not.
Great point. Yeah, what do you got?
She was given an outlet that she could use to report this, and then instead of using the outlet she was given, she instead put it in without permission.
Great. What do you got?
I think the school's probably in charge because, she should have the right to say what she wants to say, but saying derogatory things that aren't exactly, not necessarily true, she should probably talk it over with people in charge and try and help the situation before she just badmouths somebody all over the school. That should maybe be something that she could do that was kinder. That might not be exactly how it should be run. That's part of why I go to school, because I'm trying to figure this out.
Excellent thoughts. Oh, one more. What do you got?
If it was handled privately already and it's investigated for parents or something, then she should back down, because publishing bad mouthing somebody and the whole school is seen, there's no benefit from that really, especially if the teacher is already investigated and punished already.
Great. Okay, I have a question. Are you ready? You made some good points. I would like to do my best to convince you otherwise. Here we go. Question number one. Do you think the school owes the Constitution anything? Like, as a public school, must it abide by the restrictions in the Constitution? The Constitution stipulates, if I understand it correctly, that the government and government entities have to respect your free speech, right? Okay. So is the school one of those entities? Does the school have to violate your free speech? Or have to protect your free speech? What do you got for me? This is a public school. This is not a private school. Good question. Would it change things pretty significantly if it was a private school, right? It's a private school, it's not a government entity. And since it's not a government entity, it doesn't actually have to. I don't owe you free speech. The government owes you free speech. But is this a government school? Yes, it is. Does the school have to respect free speech? So let's ask a question here. Let's say that Barbara is in the halls. She's walking down the halls and she's talking to her friend. And she says, "Hey, did you see Mr. Beard today? Oh, he was so creepy with Alice. Oh, of course, Alice can get extra credit anytime she wants. She's a cheerleader." And Professor Umbridge comes along and she's like, "Oh, no, 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 no. We must not tell lies about our teachers. You must serve detention because you lied about your teacher. Don't you know we have a rule in this school? The rule in the school is you cannot complain about your teachers." Let's imagine that happens. Would that rule that you cannot complain about your teachers in the school, would that be a violation of free speech? What do you think? Sure does. Yeah.
Does that violate the, I believe, the amendment to the right to bear arms?
What do you think?
I believe it doesn't, as the school.
Mm-hmm.
It is necessary for the school.
Okay, so now, here's my question. Do you think that the school saying you can't complain about your teachers or you'll get punished, would that violate free speech? Let's get a, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think it would, because your amendments tell you what you can and can't do. You're underneath the government. So if not, if it's private, then it would change.
Okay, got it. Who else? What do you think? Does it violate your free speech? Yes.
So I'm understanding your argument. I'm trying to figure this out. But since the school, since when Barbara enrolled in the school, she agreed to their terms, which is the teacher gets to mm-hmm. make the rules about what's going in the newspaper or not.
Great point.
Whether that's affecting her free speech or not, they agreed to those rules when she enrolled in the school, so is that...
You see, I'm asking maybe a different question. I'm not asking the question, what rules does Barbara have to abide by? I'm asking the question, what rules does the school have to abide by? I mean, doesn't the school have to abide by constitutional rules?
Yeah.
And the Constitution requires that they can't take away your free speech, right? What do you got?
Are you saying that, like, the school should be making rules about the person not being stating?
About what?
Are you saying that, like, the school should be making the rules about the teachers being able to, like, say what you say, what you want to say?
I'm suggesting that perhaps there are limits to how much a school could restrict your speech under the Constitution. Okay, quick. I'm going to ask a question, and I'm going to take more commentary here. Are you enjoying this?
Yes.
Having a good time? Enjoying the thinking? Good. Okay, great. So here's a question. Let's just change a little bit. And this Barbara's walking down the hall, and she's like, "Oh, man. That president, Donald Trump, Joe Biden, whatever. That Joe Biden, I can't stand him. He's the worst president ever." And Professor Umbridge says, "Oh, no, no, no. You are not allowed to complain about our president in this school. You will be punished." Is that a violation of free speech?
Yes.
Now it is. I thought you said the school got to do whatever they wanted. So you're saying that a school can't function if you complain about your teachers? That's right. We should respect our teachers, not our president. Wait, hold on. Aren't they both government officials? I have a question. Why should we be able to complain about our president? Why did our founders give us the right to complain about him? Because he could be a bad president. Yeah?
Also, they can't really control exactly what we say to the people around us.
so we get that choice agency from God. It's not really what they gave us, it's the agency God gave.
You say, man, you have a God-given right to complain about your president. Question, do you have a God-given right to complain about your other government officials?
Yes.
How about teachers?
Yep.
Okay.
Wait, I'm not done.
Okay, well, let's hear what you got.
When they complain about their teachers in the hall to each other, that's completely fine. And she also had the agency to put that article in. But there are consequences to your choices. That's the principle that is taught. So she got the consequence for her choice of putting that article in. It, in my opinion, it's taking away the freedom of speech if you're not allowed to say stuff in the halls.
But all they're doing is giving you consequences.
Yeah.
And you just get the if you complain about the president and they put you in jail, then all that happened was the government gave you some consequences. They didn't violate your free speech. You see, just like her, she said what she wanted to say in the opinion article that the school asked her to write. And then they punished her. It was just, it wasn't the government punishing her for because they didn't like her opinion. It was just consequences because the government didn't like her opinion.
Yeah, but they told her not to do that. They told her specifically, don't put that.
Yes, but if the government has a rule that you can't complain about the president in the school, you didn't say, oh, well, then that's what the government said, so you must obey. You said, yeah, right, man. I have the freedom of speech, and you cannot stop me. Does this feel like you're playing both sides a little bit here? No. What do you got?
I think if it's a public-run school,
yeah,
then it's a public newspaper run by the government.
Correct.
The government should be able to choose what's in, and it's not a private newspaper, so it doesn't count.
I have a question. Do you think that the government should be able to use its institutions for viewpoint discrimination? Viewpoint discrimination is when the government privileges some viewpoints and then runs down others. It says, we're going to punish some viewpoints and we're going to elevate others. What do you think?
Is it fair to say, do we have to choose one side, or is it fair to say that they were both in the wrong and they both made bad decisions?
Sure, but one of them has to win the lawsuit.
Okay, I see.
Okay, question for you. Can we agree, and then I'll take thoughts here, can we agree that the primary reason that the freedom of speech exists is because you should be able to complain about your government? They operate by force, they take your taxes. That means that you have the right to say what you will, because otherwise government can sort of just do whatever it wants with the force that it exercises against you. Listen, we have free speech so we can advertise. We have free speech so we can tell people that we love them. We have free speech so that we can say whatever. But the primary reason that we have free speech is so we can complain about the government, right or wrong.
Right.
Okay, great. So you tell me how this doesn't fit this way. What happened here is that a government official said, hey, please share your opinion with the school. Then what happened is the girl said, good, I'm going to share an opinion where I criticize a member of the government. Then the government official said, I don't like you criticizing the government. You can't do it. And then they punished her because she did it anyway. You.
You have changed my mind entirely. I completely agree with you.
Ho-ho, I win! You. Oh, yes?
I was going to say, teachers kind of have a different responsibility than other government officials. They're in a different role because they're working with younger people.
Explain.
They may not know how to use their right to free speech in the best possible way yet. And if you let every kid just say whatever they want, whenever they want, you're going to have all kinds of disorder, and it's going to be really hard for people to even learn.
You've made a great point. The school, oh, let me hear. You've been wanting to say something. Go ahead.
So doesn't she get to talk anyway about it? Because they said she had the permission to talk.
Just to the administration, right?
Yeah.
So let me deal with both of these. So you say, well, teachers have to be able to limit speech to some extent. I agree. Schools can't function if kids can say anything they want. Can't get up in the middle of a class and start, you know, saying obscenities in the middle of the class. class isn't going to be able to function if you do. But here's the question. Can the school continue to function if students are allowed to criticize their teachers in the school newspaper? In fact, the school might even get better. So what do we say here?
I was actually on your side to begin with, so.
Okay. And you say that she gets to complain to the administration, but is that how free speech works? It's free speech as long as the government tells you who you can say it to. You're free. They say, you're free to criticize the president. To the vice president, that's who you can tell. But don't say it to the other citizens. No, no, no. What do you got?
You're like saying the government was like saying from their standpoint that she was in the wrong. But didn't, when you were talking about the witnesses earlier, you said she found four witnesses that all agreed with her and nobody that talked from the other side?
Not only did she base her article on four witnesses, you'll recall that I said that she was going to get full marks for the article because it was written correctly. The teacher didn't have any problem with her journalism. She didn't say you did this wrong. She said, Mr. Beard is my friend, and I don't like what you're saying about him, and I don't think it's true. So I don't want you to say it in the school newspaper. Now, how is that not the government abusing its power to quash opinions it doesn't like? Yes?
Well, if you bash all the teachers, nobody's going to want to teach. If they know that everybody's going to write articles about them that say how bad they are, they're not going to be wanting to be treated like that, and so nobody's going to want to work at your school.
And what do you got?
I disagree with you. Because I think that if you have freedom of speech, the teachers will want to become better, and you'll get better teachers that are like, oh, I'm safer. And the day will actually do better in their job of teaching and be less biased.
All right, I gotta stop. Honestly, I could do this for the full 45 minutes, but I'm making a point here. First of all, you should know that the next thing that happens is I start going after you if you voted the other way. And I convince you just as much the other way. So I start pushing you in the other direction. But the reason that I did this is I wanted you to have an experience. And a lot of you, I'm going to guess, had the experience. You thought you were right, and then you started being unsure. Be honest. Is that you? Raise your hand if you thought you were right, and then you weren't so sure you were right. I have a question. Did you feel dumb? You ever been in an argument and you start to get defensive? Like, you start getting angry? Why do you get angry?
Because you want to be right.
Why do you want to be right?
You don't want to be embarrassed.
Why would you be embarrassed?
Because you're wrong.
Your pride doesn't want you to be proved wrong.
All right, here's what I want to do now. I want you to do me a favor. Do you have note-taking materials? If you do, pull them up. I want you to do me a favor, and if not, I want you to think about this in your mind. I want you to define three words for me, please. The words are moral, competent, and rational. Moral, competent, rational. What do you think it means to be moral? What do you think it means to be competent? What do you think it means to be rational? These are just going to be private for you.
Yeah.
Oh, you have a question?
Can you explain what competent means? I don't know.
Competent means that you're like, well, I can't define it because I want you to define it. But a good synonym would be like good at things. Okay. To be capable. Capable is a good way to put that. All right. So moral, competent, rational. I want you to write down what you think. And I'm asking a specific thing. I want you to give me the best, highest quality definition you can think of. Not just like basic definition you might find in a dictionary. You think about it and you try to determine what do you think is the best way that you could put competent, moral, and rational. Feeling good? I'm going to give you a minute. And you don't have to get them all done, but just as many as you can in a minute. Fifteen seconds before I keep going, what does it mean to be moral, competent, and rational?
I don't
really know what any of those really mean. Moral is like good, competent is capable, rational is like logical. That make sense? Okay, so now what I'd like to do is I'd like to tell you a story about a student that I taught a long time ago. This is when I was a young teacher and, frankly, kind of a poor teacher. Not poor like I didn't make money. Honestly, that was true also at that point. But a poor teacher as in I was not good at teaching. I had this student, and you've probably met this student, and you may have even been this student. He wore black jeans every day and a black button-up shirt, and he would slick his hair back, and he would wear these white tennis shoes, and he'd sit back in the corner of every class that I taught, and he would gather his crew around him, and I'd be talking up, and then every once in a while, like anytime I said something, they'd be like, in the corner. You know this person? Have you met this person? He's like, guess who doesn't care about this class? This class is stupid anyway. My teacher's dumb. This is all dumb. It's dumb. I hate it. It's dumb. Have you met this student? Okay, a little more honesty. Have you ever been this student? Maybe not. But have you ever been that, sometimes have you ever been that kid that's like, this is stupid. I don't care. And have you ever maybe even been that person when it actually wasn't true? I'd like to, first of all, I'll tell you a little bit about this student. I thought this student was the worst, and that's what made me a bad teacher. I saw a jerk. I saw a lazy kid. I saw a ringleader. I saw someone who was ruining my class. And I did basically nothing for him. I was entirely unhelpful as a teacher. I don't think he got very much out of my class at all. If I could teach him again, I think I would do better, because I stopped seeing kids that way. I stopped seeing the kid who didn't care as a dumb student, a lazy student, as a jerk student. I started seeing kids that were hurt and scared and felt like they didn't belong and weren't sure if they were good enough. And at the time, I thought he was so self-assured. Like, he believed so much in himself, I've come to realize there was probably no one in that classroom who believed less in himself than him. And I feel bad that I failed him. So the question is, why do kids do that? Why do kids make conscious choices not to care? Let me give you another example. I had a student that I taught years ago. This was after I had learned a little bit more. I was a little bit more patient. And she was just like crazy. She was just acting in the craziest ways. She would say, I'd walk into class every day, and she'd be like, I'd be like, hey, guys, it's time to start class. And she'd be like, oh, do we have to? And I might be playing it up a little bit, but really, I'm not. She was really like that. She was like, oh, do we have to? And then I'd be like, okay, time for another activity. And she'd be like, oh, gosh, another activity. Can't we be done yet? It was bad. Now, earlier me might have been like, oh, my gosh. And I still kind of felt like that. Listen, she, at the end of every class, I'd be like, okay, time, class is done. And she'd, every single class, she'd be like, oh, thank goodness. so glad it's finally over. And I just want to be like, we get it. Okay, we get it. You don't like this class. You do not have to keep reminding us every week. We understood that a long time ago. But I had learned a little bit, and I was patient, so I smiled. I said, see you next week. And she came back and did the same thing next week. Here's what was crazy about it. It wasn't true. She did like the class. It was easy to see. You'd get her debating somebody. She'd be like getting after her. She was all feisty. She's like, and then you'd like look at her. And she'd like notice me looking. She'd be like, like, oh, well, didn't want you to see that. And even with me, I'd like talk to her. And then she's like getting into it. And then she'd be like, oh, I'm getting sucked in. Oh, I don't even like it. And it was like, why? Why are you pretending that you don't like this class when in fact you do? It doesn't make sense. But actually, if you learn a little bit, it turns out it makes perfect sense. So there's this really interesting study that takes place in 1957. It's one of the most groundbreaking studies in human psychology ever. It opens up the field called cognitive dissonance. I'm going to guess most of you don't know what cognitive dissonance is, but it's a really big deal, and you'll learn what it is. In this study, they have participants. These are students at Stanford University do something super boring for a whole hour. First half hour, they've got a tray. They've got 48 discs on the tray, and with only one hand, they have to pick up the discs and put them in the same order in the next tray. And then when that's done, they take the first tray, and they put it on the other side, and then they move the discs again for a half hour. Then for the next half hour, they've got a pegboard with square pegs and square holes, 48 pegs, and you start in the top left corner, pull out a peg, turn a quarter turn, put it back in. Same next one. You go through all of them. Guess what you do after that? Start over again. So they're doing these like terribly, terribly boring tasks. Now here's the interesting part of the study. After that, they pay half of the participants $1 to tell the next people that it was super fun. They have to be like, wow, that study was great. And they get paid $1. Now, $1 is more in 1957 than it is today, but it's not worth an hour of work. The other half, they pay $20. And that's more than it is today. And even today, it might be okay for a university student. Back then, like, they were getting really paid. Then here's what they do. They ask them, how much did you like your activities? And you know what? There's a difference between the people who get paid $1 and $20. One of these groups says that they like the activities much more than the other. Which one do you think it was? What was that?
$1.
One, 20. What do you got?
The $1 one probably said they liked it more because they were being paid a lot.
Hmm. So it was the $1. It seems counterintuitive for a lot of people, and this is why it was such a groundbreaking study. Because you think, well, you just got a pleasurable experience. Didn't you like it? You got paid $20, but they rated it less. Here's what opened up the field of cognitive dissonance research. They said, this is what the author of the study said. Here's what I think is going on, and then this gets confirmed in further studies. He says, what happened is that the people who got paid $20, they're like, I just did something super boring. And then I had to lie about it. And then I got paid $20, so worth it. See how that works? No dissonance. Everything makes sense. The people who made $1, though, they're like, I just did something super boring. And then I got paid $1 to lie about it. I'm a chump. No, I'm not. I'm a smart person. Yes, you are. You just did something really dumb. No, I'm not. I'm a smart person. No, you're not. You just did something really dumb. You see that war that's happening inside of themselves? And they need to figure it out. Am I smart or am I dumb? And guess what humans always resolve on? I'm smart. So they say, you know what? maybe I'm not such a chump. Because when it comes down to it, think about it real hard. Butt peg turning was pretty good. That was a pretty good time. Me a chump? No way. I enjoyed it thoroughly. And then after I enjoyed it thoroughly, after that, then I got paid a dollar, but who cares? Because I had a good time. Do you see the point? The person has to believe that they're a moral or a rational person, that they're smart. Further research, and this is particularly by a professor named Elliot Aronson, they does further research on this. It essentially explains cognitive dissonance. He says cognitive dissonance is the idea that humans don't like to have competing ideas in their mind. Did anyone here ever have any cognitive dissonance while we were doing our discussion, while we were debating back and forth? You're like, oh, she has the right to free speech, and I believe in that. But also, she should do what the teacher says, and these are warring in my mind, and it causes difficulty inside your brain. That's called cognitive dissonance, that discomfort of believing disparate things or contradictory things. So are you all recognizing what cognitive dissonance is? Well, Elliot Aronson makes this sort of groundbreaking paper that becomes like this, you know, like the biggest, most important conclusion in cognitive dissonance research in a long time. He says, yeah, people don't like competing ideas in their mind, but here's when dissonance really happens. Dissonance really happens when the ideas in your head start to mess with your self-concept. In other words, he says there are three things humans must believe about themselves, cognitive imperatives, if you will, things that you gotta believe. Humans must believe that they are moral, that they are competent, that they are rational. In other words, that they're good people, that they're good at things, and that they're smart. And so when humans are presented with information that says you are not smart, you are not moral, you are not rational, you are not a good person, then they will do anything they can to resolve that. So now, let's think about my student who was like, oh, do we really have to be doing this? I'd like to finish the story for you. She comes back for year two. I'm flabbergasted. I can't think, why on earth, you hated class one, why would you come for class two? And she's a little older, she's a little more mature, and she wants help with the speech. She says, hey, Sam, I want help with my oratory. I say, okay. What's your oratory about? She says, I want to give a speech about how you shouldn't worry too much about what other people think about you. And then she starts crying. I was like, oh, no. Tell me about the speech. Why do you want to give it? And she was like, well, last year, I lost all of my friends. They just ditched me. And I felt like garbage. And I'm sorry, Sam, that I was such a butt in your class. But I'm thinking that maybe I shouldn't be too worried about what people think about me. Last year, I was really worried that people thought that I was nobody. But maybe I shouldn't worry about that too much. Can we re-examine her behavior now? She's like, I don't care about this class. Is it because she doesn't care about the class? No. It's because she feels like garbage. Feels like nobody likes her. So, listen. She has to feel smart. And she already feels dumb. All her friends ditched her. Maybe it's because she's a dummy. So if she doesn't care about the class, then guess what? She doesn't have to try. And if you don't try, then you don't have to feel dumb. She says, I want to feel like a good person, but I feel like garbage. All my friends left me. But you know what? If I can be like, hey guys, this class is stupid, right? You're with me, huh? Then maybe she doesn't feel like garbage because she has people that like her. You understand what I'm saying here? I am proposing to you that moment when you are like, I just don't care, particularly when it's not true. It is driven by a need to feel moral and competent and rational. That you feel like garbage, and not caring is easier than feeling like garbage. Do you understand what I'm saying? Are there questions here? Okay, I've got 5 minutes to wrap this up. So I want you to think about our experience that we had. This experience that we had together. Here I was proving you wrong. You thought, this was definitely not a violation of her free speech. And then I start saying, you're wrong about that. And maybe you start feeling like maybe you are wrong. I think the question that I ask is essential. Does it make you feel dumb? Do you feel dumb? This is a more important question. When you get an answer wrong on a test, do you feel dumb? When you get up in front of other people and you try to say something and you stumble, do you feel dumb? When you like make a boneheaded mistake and your parents are like, what are you doing? Do you feel like a bad kid? When you try something in a class and it doesn't go so well, do you feel incompetent? This is a key question. I asked you to define these words. Here's my proposition. That the primary reason that kids engage in apathy, they start being like, I don't care, and sitting in the corner and wearing black, all black and being like, did you hear what that idiot said? That the primary reason that kids do this is because they have bad definitions for what it means to be competent and moral and rational and to belong and to be a good person. I want you to think about your definition. If you wrote it down, then look at it. But think about this definition that you had. Think about the definition of the word competent. If your definition of the word competent is competent means that you're good at what you're doing. Do you get to be competent and also human? You don't. I'm going to give you a secret to human life. Here's the secret to human life. It's the rule. You're bad at stuff and then you're good at stuff. You don't get to be good at stuff first and then bad, and then just be good forever. I guess bad at stuff second. I don't know. You don't get to be good first. You're bad first and then you're good. So here's my question. Do you get to be competent if your definition is competent means I'm good at what I do? You will be incompetent in every class you ever take, but guess what your brain will not actually allow you to believe? That you are incompetent. Human brains don't do it. They will fight against it, and because you feel like a dummy, you will then say, well, who freaking cares? Look at this stupid teacher. Thank goodness we get to be done with this class. Am I right, guys? Because you feel dumb and you're not allowed to do it and you have to have a way out. So I have a proposition for you. My proposition is that the most competent person in the room is not the person who does it best. That's competent, right? In this group, the most competent person is not the person who could have beaten me in the debate, which was none of you, obviously. I'm awesome, so there's that. Just kidding. The most competent person was not the person who could do it best. The most competent person was the person who learned the lesson that competence really means that you try, even if you suck at it, so you can get better. That's what competence looks like. The most competent person was the person who raised their hand even though they thought, maybe Sam's going to destroy my argument here. Because I want to learn. That's competence. That's true competence. Listen, you develop that competence, you become good at trying things even though you're going to suck at them, you will never, ever not be competent eventually. You will be good at anything you want to be good at. So do you see that that's the most important type of competence? Competence. Not only that, you will not be forced into a position where you have to be like, well, I don't even care. Because you recognize that being bad at stuff is part of being good at stuff. Do you understand what I'm saying? I suggest you change your definition so that you can be a more successful and well-adjusted and happy human. I suggest that you change what it means to be rational, to be smart. Is the smartest person the one with the answers? Socrates said that the smartest person was the person who recognized that they didn't have all the answers. That's the smartest person, because that person is open to learning. When a teacher or your parent or a textbook or a math question asks you a question and you don't know the answer, are you a dummy? No. You might feel like it, but it's not true. The most intelligent person is the person who understands that. They get that that's how life works. And maybe I could suggest to you also that the best person in the room, the most moral person in the room, is not the person who always gets everything right. Because no one always gets everything right. Just accept that. It's not true. There's no one who does it. The best person in the room is the person who can, with an honest heart, say, I messed up and I'm sorry. And if you can do that, you can stop being like, well, who frigging cares? So I look back at this student, this kid wearing black jeans and screwing everything up, and he was an eternal screw up, and no one liked teaching him. And I think, what would his life have been if maybe I'd understood something better and I could have convinced him that he wasn't a screw up, he was a normal person. He wasn't a dummy, he was a normal person. He wasn't a bad kid. He was scared that he was not a good enough kid. Maybe things would have been better. I can't do that for him anymore. I don't know where he is, and I feel bad. But I'm not perfect either, so I guess the only thing I can do is move forward. And I hope I can convince you. Not a bad kid. Not a dumb kid. Not a lazy kid or an incompetent kid. You're a human. And that's okay. And that means it's okay to care. Thank you all. You've been the best.